everyone, and welcome to another episode of Pulse. So today we're going to be talking about the RISE program, what that means, what reentry programs and vocational training is like, and what it means and why more companies should be second chance employers. This week I have with me my co-host, as always, Michael Olson.
Hey, everybody.
And we are also so happy to be joined this week by Christy Luther, who is in charge of the RISE program here in Oklahoma that we're going to get more into. But Christy, if you'd like to say a quick hello.
Hi.
So mass incarceration affects more people than you may think. 1 in 3 American adults has a criminal record, according to the National Conference of State Legislators. On top of that, according to the National Hire Network, nearly 75% of formerly incarcerated individuals are still unemployed a year after release. And for companies who have hired second chance employees, they all universally say that these candidates are as good, if not better, than someone without a criminal record. We hope to bring in some of this testimony, as well as what Christy is seeing on a daily basis with the women that she has the opportunity to work with. Christy, with that, would you like to introduce what the RISE program is?
Yeah, thank you. We're Oklahoma's first cosmetology school in a women's prison, and we just recently received our barber accreditation as well. So we hope to, you know, tell you a little bit about what we do. So we train the ladies at the prison, and once they're released, we surround them with reentry, just wraparound services such as transitional housing, which we have, clothing, their career tools as well, and immediate job placement. And to date, after 5 years of being established in Mabel Bassett Correctional Center, we've had 0 recidivism rate. So not one woman in 5 years has returned to prison. You know, we just believe education instead of incarceration. We do have a transitional home. We, you know, have seen success stories from these ladies who have their children back with them. They've purchased their first vehicle. They've, you know, rented their first apartments, and many of them have just changed their life dramatically. We participate in Celebrate Recovery. We do mentoring. We have a lot of volunteers and stuff. So we've just fashioned a sisterhood around them. And, you know, stopping in at their job to just check on them and let them know, you know, just because they're on the other side of the prison gate, that our support for them does not end at that point.
That's incredible. And I don't know if people understand how amazing a 0% is. I mean, that's incredible and truly, truly proves what so many studies say and so many employers say, that it matters. Giving these individuals opportunities is the best way to set them up.
That is absolutely truth. And to have immediate job placement, that they step into a job once they're out. But prior to their release, you know, we go before the Pardon and Parole Board on their behalf, and we advocate for them. We let them know that they have a job waiting for them, as well as housing and their career tools. We're embarking on a whole new adventure this year. We are starting a diversion school, if you will, in Oklahoma City. So what we'd like to do is partner with other second chance organizations to be able to send their participants on the pre-sentencing level to come to school to get their barber or cosmetology license, again, with the promise of immediate job placement. And I don't know that anyone else is doing that type of vocational training on a pre-sentencing level, but you know, we're working to try to establish a way for courts to sentence them, if you will, or stipulate them to our program instead of prison. So again, it's that education instead of incarceration that we believe in.
Yeah, there's a tie where there is a problem within prisons of unequal placement in job training. Usually we see on a statistical level, at least in some cases, that the skilled job programs are going predominantly to white men, and we're not seeing the same rate of other inmates receiving human capital improvements as much as their ratios within the prisons would suggest.
I think that's definitely a huge asset to the RISE program, as it is marketed, of course, and available only to the women of Mabel Bassett. So it allows more individuals to be placed with this opportunity. Christy, when you spoke about getting the additional barber certification as well, do you ever have hopes of opening this program up in other facilities, or would you like to just maintain and grow where it is right now?
Well, that's interesting that you say that, because we actually, our team is going to Eddie Warrior, which is up north of the state, to the minimum yard for DOC. They have a building that they would like for us to look at so that we can hopefully do our second school behind the wire to help accommodate that area of the state, the northern area of the state, as well as, you know, the ladies and the community there. So we're excited about that. We'll go there and take a look around and see what kind of funding we can do and hopefully just enlarge our territory. Hopefully by the end of this year, just stepping out in faith, we're believing that we'll have three schools by the end of this year. And the one here in Oklahoma City, for, you know, we want to primarily work with justice involved individuals, and that being including men as well.
That's incredible. Congratulations. It's so exciting to see you guys grow. You definitely deserve it.
Thank you.
According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, a study said that 83% of state prisoners were rearrested in the first 9 years after their release. And the studies consistently show that it's a lack of education and a lack of employment that are linked with recidivism rates. We've spoken a lot about how these facilities aren't meeting individuals where they are when they're coming into the facilities. You can help individuals stay out of this cycle, out of this system, by giving them a job. But the studies are also finding it can't just be a fast food job. Though we are so grateful for those opportunities, that doesn't necessarily lower recidivism rates because they don't have upward mobility. You need jobs that allow these individuals to grow, to have space, to be able to go anywhere that they want with these jobs. Some of these jobs could be in construction, in manufacturing, anything that has the potential for growth.
I'd also like to point out that we've been talking a lot about people that have been convicted and are currently incarcerated, but even arrests affect employability. So there was a study that showed that white job applicants without an arrest received a callback from an employer at 38.8% compared to 34.7% of those with just a misdemeanor arrest on their record. And for African Americans, the no arrest callback rate was 27.5% compared to 23.5% with a misdemeanor arrest. So the average is very close to 4% for both groups. But interestingly, the diversity of the workplace has a large impact on callback rates. For instance, where non-white workers were observed at jobs where African-American applicants applied, those with arrest records actually received a callback at a higher rate than the control group. And the lowest callback rate, which was 17%, was African-American applicants applying to all white workplaces. So we can see that even arrests are affecting the employability of these individuals.
Right, which leads us to need to set these individuals up for success, like we've said. And this success must start both before they exit these facilities and after. Like Christy was saying, it needs to be this wraparound approach, letting them know that they are supported both before and after, and that that support system will not just disappear. Both educational and vocational training are both very, very important. People who receive general education and vocational training are significantly less likely to return to prison after release and are more likely to find employment than their peers who do not receive such opportunities. Education programs inside prisons are very, very cost-effective, with a $1 investment in prison education reduces the incarceration cost by $4 to $5 for the first 3 years post-release. And an individual who takes an educational course has about a 40% lower chance of returning to prison. This also kind of goes to exactly what Christy was saying about, she has a 0% recidivism rates for these women who are receiving these opportunities and these care. It's, again, just proving itself. A case study that I did find really interesting when I was looking this up, of course, I knew of the RISE program, but I didn't personally know how prevalent programs like this were or weren't. And NPR did a really interesting story. It's pretty short, so I won't ruin it, but it's a St. Louis-based tech nonprofit in which they were training individuals in computer programming while they're still incarcerated to give them a shot at landing jobs in the tech sphere, which is very, very competitive. Basically, one of the students has been locked up since 2008, and the 42-year-old had literally never used a computer before taking this class. And in the class, he went from learning how to type, learning how to turn the computer on, learning everything, to coding in multiple languages. 8 other states actually offered the same program in computer programming. And so me, as a fellow computer programming nerd, found that extremely, extremely interesting. And that will change their lives. The mobility of that job is so incredible, which does lead me to want to know, what made you want RISE to be in cosmetology and in barber certification? What led you to that industry, that area or specialty?
Well, I have been in that industry for over 30 years. And it's always been a lucrative career for me. And you said the mobility. And so hands down, that matters because, you know, reciprocity, we can have our license transferred from state to state. And it was a personal visit to Eddie Warrior, my own self, that I worked in the beauty shop while I was there, and to see a need. Many of the women that were incarcerated there would come to the beauty shop to attempt to find a job just while they're there. I would ask them, you know, have you been to cosmetology or barbering school? And they would assure me that the answer was yes, that they had gone through training. And once I had them do a haircut, you could see that they really had not completed the training. So I would ask them, if you could do anything, what would you do? And they said, gosh, I would go back to school and finish. I've just held on to my own little mantra that says, if you see a need, you have been called. Maybe no one else is coming. So I saw a need for training to help those ladies finish their education. And that's kind of where it began. I call it God's program because he filled the need for many of the women there to get the additional training. And the bonus part of it, of course, is, you know, to see family restoration that they never expected to have again, as their families have written them off. For them to have a career and to be have a professional career and be managers and assistant managers and to see them succeed, that's the greatest reward for me. It's like the beautiful harvest. You plant seeds and you know, they do the hard work, they do the testing part of it, but I get a front row seat to watch them succeed. So that's really important to me.
I had the opportunity to meet with some of the graduates of your program when myself and our statewide engagement director, Evita, attended your gala, and every single one of them just holds themselves with so much grace, but also you can tell is so thankful. So for these opportunities and the life that they've restarted at the gala, it was so powerful. I'm not sure if you'd like to touch on it, but when they all got to hold up cards of who they used to be versus who they are now, and being able to see that, even not knowing them personally, was so, so incredible. I can't imagine how proud you are of them being able to see it.
Yeah, they're my sisters or my kids, really, is how I feel about them. But just to see them grab a hold of that second chance or a second opportunity at life and do it differently, who wouldn't be proud of them? And thank you for attending our fundraiser, spelt like a hair raiser. We had such great time, and our theme was the red carpet. And so each of the ladies, they embrace the theme every year. It's a different theme that we have. And this was our 4th annual one. And this year just happened to be red carpet, old Hollywood. And so they all bought these evening gowns and got to dress up and things that they'd never done before. And I think one of the most impactful and powerful moments for the whole evening, not only we had incredible speakers, and I'm so grateful for them, but when the ladies got up on stage to do what we call cardboard testimonies. And it's 3 or 4 words maybe on one side of the of their sign that does talk about their old life. And then they turn it over and it is an indication of all the new things that they're doing. So one that was really powerful to me was one of our ladies, she had a sign that said dope dealer on one side, and on the other side, it said hope dealer. And then one of the ladies I'm actually going to hire for our new school, on one side of the sign, it was her DOC number and it was scratched out. And on the other side of the sign, it was her cosmetology and barbering license number. So it was, it was pretty powerful, you know, just to see that transformation, and they own it and they hold their head proud, high, and they stand very proud with their accomplishments. They just have testimony after testimony. And weekly, they text me, reach out to me on Facebook and show me different haircuts that they've done or pictures with them reuniting with their family or here's my new car. And it's kind of, I've somehow been given the opportunity and the role of mama bear, I guess. They want me to still continue to be proud of them. And my support is never ending for them. And sometimes we just need to be surrounded by those people that will be our cheerleader. You know, we have a saying, we want to go where we're celebrated, not tolerated. And that's what we do. So it's way more than just cosmetology and barbering. It's a complete life change. Again, you see a need, you have been called. If you have to have gone really or been in the situation to understand the difficulties and hurdles that formerly incarcerated people, I'll just say people, have when they get out, whether it be tracking down a Social Security card or the birth certificate or retaking that driving test or signing up for food stamps or looking for a job or getting clothing. I mean, there's so many things that we take for granted that just, we just live life every day. And we don't stop and think how traumatic it can be, like you said earlier, to turn on a computer and try to navigate through that hardship. Just social anxiety, you will they know I've been incarcerated? Will they judge me? Will they allow me to cut their hair or live next door to them? And there are things that we don't think about. And as a community, as a city, as a state, and nation for that matter, we should really embrace our formerly incarcerated people because the majority are coming out of prison. And as far as I'm concerned, I think that's wonderful. And I want neighbors who, whether they've been incarcerated or not, have a good job skill set and can pay their taxes and have a family and be great taxpaying, law-abiding, reemergent citizens.
It's so much more to just remember that these are human beings. They're real people with feelings and lives. And we can't take all of us make mistakes. I put this in the chat probably too much when sometimes we get into, of course, for OCJR, we're seeing the more negative side often of how the legislator will characterize individuals who have made a mistake. And I always put it when we're talking inside our company of who here has stopped at every single stop sign in their life. And for some people, they might think, oh, well, that's really like dumbing it down, but it's not. Truly, individuals are having their lives altered for the rest of their life for very minor mistakes. And whether it's minor or whether it's large, these people are people at the end of the day. Right. And I think that kind of transitions us well into the kind of women that are most benefited from your program, or maybe not most, but greatly benefited, are women who are being over-sentenced and over-incarcerated due to failure to protect laws, or, well, really a lot of discriminatory laws in Oklahoma. We could go into a few of them, but I know that failure to protect, recently there was an amazing article that just came out about one of your women who details how difficult it was to be incarcerated under those terms and for that length. If you'd like to speak about her story and or just failure to protect in general.
That would be Toni. And she was one of our graduates and a very close dear friend. And I actually had the opportunity this last year to actually be in the delivery room when her son was born. So what a gift out of cosmetology school, what an incredible gift. But I did have the opportunity to go to the Capitol to speak at a study that they had, an interim study, about considering doing a bill against the failure to protect. In that, I brought a different perspective. We heard statistics and data and everything and about the number of men that are incarcerated for that particular charge versus the number of women, which it truly is a, no offense to anyone, but a gender bias law for sure. Because at the age of 13, whether you're a mother or not, should you actually really know all the ins and outs about the right way to do things? And the answer is no on that. But I had the opportunity to go. So instead of giving all the paperwork, I brought the people. I am definitely people over paperwork every single day in everything that I do. So I stood before the study, those in the study and the panels there, and I just said, my name is Tony, and here's my story, and my name is Ashley, and my name is Kelsey. And so I gave the stories of some of the women who have come out of my program, and I can speak to that because I see them on a daily basis. There are a few, and so there are so many more that I didn't address, but to put a face on it, to put a name on it as opposed to a DOC number, to put the real situation about what happened. So as far as Tony is concerned, she did not injure her children at all. She happened to be in a relationship, a quite abusive relationship, I might add, where she was fearful and not knowing the extent of the abuse that was happening to her child when it came down to it, and her child actually had to go to the hospital. The long story short is she was arrested and was ultimately handed a sentence of 30 years, where the actual abuser only served 2 years in county jail. And so, you know, he was out well before she was. Thankfully, after having served 15 years and being denied commutation many times, the governor, Governor Stitt, actually signed her commutation to allow her to leave after having served 15 years. Once her children, who pleaded for her to be out, were actually grown and graduated, you know. So, and that's just one story. And she's flourishing right now. She's working in a salon and is assistant manager, has purchased her own car and lives in her own apartment and has her own brand new baby that's not even a year old. It's because she's done the hard work, because God was on her side, and because she's got a huge support system. And I think you heard her say that in the interview. Failure to protect is no one wants to touch it. No one wants to write a law or a bill, or no one wants to talk about it. The sentencing, you know, guidelines and the sentencing range for that is ludicrous and ridiculous and quite large for the mother to get 30 years and the abuser to only get 2 in county jail. I'm not sure how they think that makes sense.
I ask Mike about the statistics every time that we have something come up. Of course, in Oklahoma recently, Rebecca Hogue made very wide news, and that was a case of failure to protect. And Mike, I don't know if you do want to share any of the data that Christy was kind of alluding to that we so commonly do put out there, but.
Yeah, definitely. The sentencing data shows that on average, those convicted spend 11 years in prison and probation, but the range is extremely wide. The lowest received only 2 years of probation, and the highest received life in prison. And women make up 93% of those convicted, 93%. And the law does not take into account domestic violence. And these women are often victims themselves, as many as 50% of the cases by some estimates. And as Christy just laid out, a lot of them are victims themselves.
Clara, this whole thing reminds me as well of there was another interim study that was actually on expungement reform. And there was a woman who, well, she had an employer speak on her behalf due to wanting to remain anonymous, but she just stated that her name was Sarah and she's a resident of Tulsa. And she was talking about her life, and she basically detailed, I'll just read it really quick, but she said, I have 3 kids from my first marriage and they're my everything. I had a criminal record from my struggle with pills more than a decade ago. As a single mom, all I wanted was to finish my college degree, find a higher paying job in healthcare, and buy my kids a house in a better neighborhood. I've had so many jobs over the years pass me over because of my record. A couple of employers were honest about the fact that they would have called me back except for my record. I went to an expungement event in Tulsa in 2019, and the lawyers there were finally able to help me clear my old record. Since then, I got a better paying job. My kids and I have moved to a better neighborhood, and I have started going to school remotely last year. I'm so grateful I've gotten the chance to build a better life for my kids. I think so many people out there who mess up when they're just kids, they need another chance. And that reminded me, in thinking of all of the things that we're detailing that these individuals need to rebuild their lives. And when you're putting all of these roadblocks in front of them and continuing to punish them for mistakes that they've made, that last line is just always gets me when I think about situations like this. The employer, though, that did share her story was Red Pin Bowling in Oklahoma City. And they themselves are a second chance employer. And they stated that for the past 8 to 9 years of operations, they were completely committed to being a second chance employer. And 10 to 30% of their workforce at any given time had a previous record. They stated that all but one of their kitchen managers came to them with some history of a record. All of their bowling mechanics, all of their bussers, all of their kitchen crew, some of their hosts, and even some of their desk folks. And she goes on to, this was Erin Brewer, who's the former owner. She went on to state that they were the best workers she ever had. They were the most consistent. They were the most stable. They wanted to work. They wanted to learn. And though this is a positive way of looking at it, something we need to say here as well is they need to work. These people are saddled with crippling fines and fees and crippling barriers to getting their life back together. It's not just that they need to pay their fines and fees, they also need to pay for a house. They also need to pay the fees to get their driver's license reinstated. They also need to pay, you know, fee after fee after fee. So the importance of second chance employers goes far beyond just needing to make ends meet or just fines and fees when looking at the full picture, but it's also detrimental to their life that they have so many opportunities cut off from them.
Yeah, and I would also just like to echo that it's not only the people being released from prison that are losing opportunities, but us as a state on the whole. Shutting people out of the labor market due to a criminal conviction costs the United States economy an estimated $87 billion in lost GDP per year. So this isn't just something that affects people who are formerly incarcerated. It truly affects all of us.
In Oklahoma, I was looking up, we do have a list ourselves that we've compiled of second chance employers that we have on our website that's available for everyone to see. We, again, know how difficult it is to find employment. So we try to make it easy. We give the phone numbers and locations and companies that we know of that advertise second chance employers. Many of them are large companies such as Walmart, Starbucks, Home Depot, McDonald's, Carl's Jr., Target, a lot of things like that. There are some large ones that are more important for Oklahoma or more Oklahoma-centric, such as American Airlines, St. Francis Hospital, St. John's Medical Center, many, many of the construction companies, almost all of them actually that we contacted, and Sonic as well. Again, this list is on our website. It also details all of the workforce locations and contacts for all of the Oklahoma locations as well. We hope that this can be a first step, and we do strongly encourage people to share this with their networks, with anyone that they have, and everywhere that we go. If you ever see us tabling, we always have reentry resource guides with us. We might not be giving them out in mass as they are quite lengthy, but we have 14-page packets of everywhere you can get clothes, everywhere there's food banks, everywhere that's a second chance employer, anything like that. So you can also contact us directly, and we'll be happy to send that. It's on our website as well. Just circling kind of back to where we started in this, and that it's the wraparound services that are needed. Though here we're highlighting second chance employers and employment as being incredibly important. In the end, it's needing to really uplift these people in every which way.
Ashley, I'd like to also add, when you were talking about, you know, the importance of employment and the things, not only fines and fees that people have to pay, you know, once they're released from prison, we forget that there might also be ankle monitor fees, which are pretty extensive, and probation fees, restitution, and not only that, but back child support with interest. That's also another concern. It can take an entire paycheck plus. It goes back to, I feel like having training and just job skills and education really help people come up out of some of those exorbitant fees that they seem to find themselves having once they're released.
Yes, yeah, definitely. One of our OCGR ambassadors details that when she came out of the incarceral system, she herself had over $150,000 in fines and fees. it's also the weight of that mentally. I'd like to just like say that too. It's not just that they have this, which is awful, but literally just knowing that you have more than a house worth of debt hanging over your head. She talks about, she herself, she works three jobs, and she talks about how difficult it is and how she barely has a paycheck to live on after she pays all of the fees that are necessary. So I think that one of them is a mandatory $20,000 fine that is assessed due to it being a trafficking violation. So even that just right off the bat is insane. It's an insane number.
And to go along with that also, the fear of returning back to prison if they don't pay. That living in that fear on a daily is, it's pretty stressful.
Yes, yes. I truly could not imagine that myself. If you are a company, if you're a small business, if you're a big business, whatever it is, listening to this, and we have begun to convince you of the importance of this, there might be a way we can push a few of you over the edge and talk about why companies do it anyways. Another big incentive may be money. Of course, we would all just like people to do it because they want people to benefit and people to thrive, but we know that that's not the world that we live in. So another big incentive is money. The benefits are pretty significant thanks to the Federal Work Opportunity Tax Credit. Employers who hire a qualified individual who was previously incarcerated can claim a tax credit of up to 25% of their first year's wages if the employee works at least 120 hours and 40% if they work over 400 hours. If you're a small business owner, the state or municipality may also offer additional incentives. So again, we hope that companies would just want to do this because we're sitting here telling you how much it can change lives and truly, truly break the cycle of incarceration for so many individuals and help them restart. It also opens up your job pool. You are then able to hire more qualified individuals. You're able to hire individuals who come from different backgrounds. You're able to have a more robust workforce when you allow all individuals to apply for your positions.
What we're seeing around the country is that a lot of these programs like RISE are expressly funded and allowed to exist based on their results on recidivism rates. And luckily, RISE has nothing to worry about because 0% is incredible, but these programs are important regardless of their result on recidivism. And this is through a process called signaling. So employers generally interpret arrests and convictions as indicating low worker quality and decreased productivity. And in order to understand exactly what signaling is, it's important to recognize the existence of information asymmetry associated with hiring someone who's leaving the incarceral setting. So the individual who's applying for a job after a period of incarceration knows who they are and is aware of their productive abilities and limitations, but employers will only truly be aware of their abilities after the decision to hire them has been made. And this is not a so-called repeat game. And so individuals don't have the ability or the desire to acquire a reputation for crime desistance or work productivity. And this is important because the literature is mixed on the effectiveness of transitional work programs. Some studies found significant impact, others have found not significant impact. But relying on pure recidivism on the effectiveness of these programs can be misleading, because successfully enrolling in, actively participating in, and successfully completing employment training programs can act as a signal to eventual employers that the individual is a productive and hardworking employee. So regardless of the results on recidivism, these programs can make a difference in differentiating employable skills for those leaving the incarceral setting. And reducing recidivism is just an added bonus. So 0% recidivism is incredible. And that's amazing that RISE is able to accomplish that.
I would like to say thank you for that. Every day I wake up and say, okay, today we have zero recidivism rate, because I fully aware that it could change at any time. And I just want you to know as well, like we, our organization is a 501c3 nonprofit. So we do not at this time receive any federal and or state funding at all. It's all done through private donations and grant writing opportunities. And so that's how we're funded. We've tried for a while, actually 5 years, to be able to have access to pay for success funding, which would help us because in essence, we offer the free education and all of the wraparound services for participants. Whether we receive funding or whether we do not, we are going to keep going with our mission, which is to help give second chances to people who are doing the hard work, who want a difference in their life and want to have their lives and their, you know, their children back.
Awesome. So if, as just like a normal person listening to this podcast, is there anything we can do to help RISE, or is there anything like that?
Well, we have, you know, a few different means of donating. We have a GoFundMe page, and we have our website is www.riseprograminc.com. You can go there. There's ways to donate or even just encouraging letters. You know, we about community. We have a Facebook page as well, which is really, it's just a miracle because DOC allows us to take pictures of the women. It's week by week. We have updated photos of, you know, what we're learning in class. The great thing that came out of that is the family restoration. Maybe their family gave up on them. For them to be on the RISE program Facebook page and to see what we're doing. And they're like, that's my daughter. That's my sister. There's my mom. And it really, you know, just a beautiful restoration tool that we did not even expect. I would say you guys can check us out on any of those platforms. But more than anything, I would just say to anyone that's listening, those are sisters and moms and daughters and human beings that made a mistake. I talked earlier, Ashley, about maybe not stopping at a stop sign or something. If we're speeding down the expressway, that's breaking the law. If we cheat on our taxes or fudge a little bit, that's breaking the law. So how many of us are without that? So I don't want to be known for the worst day of my life or the worst decision I made, and neither do any of the people in prison. I would just ask that we open our minds and our hearts to giving people a second chance. Their life depends on it. They'll go back to prison if they don't have a means to support themselves and their family.
It's so, so, so important to remember when we're looking at legislation, when we're looking at data, when we're looking at anything, that it's truthful, of course, but that it's personal as well, as these are people. I couldn't help but think when Mike was talking about different programs being measured on recidivism rates, that State Question 780 has come under fire recently with misleading recidivism rates that have been attributed to it. Recidivism rates should never be utilized to measure the success of a measure that is changing people's lives and saving lives, as well as for these programs. When looking at the misinformation of the over 400 individuals that had their sentences commutated due to the mass commutation in November of 2019, an article claims that over 200 of them, barely over 200 of them, were rearrested. They kind of do a hand waving over all of these arrests, stating that they were for things such as trespassing. Many of them were for warrants that were for before they ever served time. We're talking warrants from like the 1990s that were finally served. There is no question to us that these people were disproportionately watched. When looking at it farther, when you keep going into the data, those individuals were rearrested, but only 23 individuals ended up being sentenced to serve additional time. That's 4%, or that's about an eighth of the national return to prison rate of 32% within 2 years. That's an incredible number, though we should never be measuring the success of things on recidivism rates, even when we continue to look at recidivism rates. They're amazing. We have a 0%. We have a 4%. I am beginning to hate the metric of recidivism rates, as I'm sure a lot of people interested in criminal legal reform are.
Yeah, I mean, it just goes to show that first arrests are not a good way to measure recidivism because they show how close you are to the system, your system involvement, not necessarily that you committed a crime. That's what a conviction shows. Arrests just show that you're in an area that could be over-policed. You're homeless. You're just exposed to the policing system more often than it does show that you're committing crimes. So just focusing on arrests is extremely misleading. And that's why what I was talking about earlier, that even misdemeanor arrests are infecting employability, why that's so important. Because these people haven't even been convicted of a crime. They have a single arrest for a misdemeanor on their record, and they are seen as less employable.
Right. And that expungement reform in terms of study that I touched on from before, it said that 100,000 Oklahomans could immediately benefit from automatic expungement or clean slate legislation. And a lot of those people are no file cases or people where there was never a conviction. They never even had charges formally brought against them. But being able to help that many Oklahomans just right off the bat should also show the severity of the lives that we're talking about here. We will move on to closing thoughts. I want to thank you again, Christy, for being here with us, for educating us on RISE, and even educating us more on what these women's lives look like. I find myself, the more that I do these podcasts, the more that I work for OCJR, I'm constantly learning. I never personally thought to think of back child support and some of the other things that you listed. It's really, really nice to be able to continue to learn myself as an advocate and see where I can continue to grow. So thank you for that. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your work with the RISE program.
I just thank you for the opportunity to share about our program and just some of the challenges that Oklahoma faces with like the failure to protect and that. And I thank you guys for all your hard work and for being an advocate for those that are incarcerated and other justice involved individuals. So I'm really grateful for the opportunity. And I think that all I can say is if you see a need, you have been called. And whatever that is, if something makes you angry, if it stirs you up or makes you sad, or you see an injustice, you know, I hope it stirs you to the point of being the change that you want to see. So thank you again, Ashley, for the opportunity to be here. And thank you, Michael, too, for all the information.
My closing thoughts, I'd just like to thank Christy and thank the RISE program for all that they're doing to ensure that Oklahoma is fixing its incarceral problems and making Oklahoma safer and keeping people employed in our state. So I'd like to just thank Christy and the RISE program for all their work.
I completely agree. I'm very happy. It's very rare that our podcast episodes are so cheery. That sounds bad, but I feel like criminal legal reform often can just be really sad and daunting. But this, I feel like, is definitely one of our happier episodes, I'm happy to report. So thank you to all of our listeners. We hope that you will watch other episodes, and we hope to see you back next week.